welcome to the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share our shows to get the latest motor racing news, interviews, and motoring stories.
To the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, it's the first edition, and my special guest is none other than Tidsley. Martin Grady, the phenomenal racing driver and sim driver, and it's the first podcast interview with the man himself. Well, Martin, how are you this morning?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's phenomenal to have you on the show and see you're the first person to come on our new podcast show, which is great. You're one of our most successful podcast interviews in terms of, because I've interviewed people like Super GT before, which is phenomenal, and I hope to do him in the next few while as well again. But you have won FI races and all sorts of major titles. How did it all start?
Well, that's true actually, isn't it? I'm winning FIA races. I've not won a tournament yet, but I started with GT Academy. Well, Gran Turismo originally started when I was about 5 years old, 6 years old, probably six or seven, when I kept saying I was bored. So my mum got sick of me saying I was bored, got Gran Turismo 1 and a PlayStation 1 and a TV, which actually, when playing Gran Turismo, the whole picture would roll backwards. So I had to learn Grand Valley East as the screen would go up and then off and then come back on at the bottom. And I learned Valley East that way. It was absolutely nuts. And then obviously it got serious with GT Academy in 2011. And then from there, just been playing ever since.
Wow. Now that is something else. And then because, I mean, did you think you had a kind of knack for it by, because you're obviously getting onto these qualifying times and then you were able to get into the GT Academy. I mean, that must have been an amazing experience to qualify for all of that. How did that all go? I mean, how did you just decide that that was the game for you and then you just wanted to go for it? Or, it must have been an amazing experience.
Well, I've always been good at games in general. I've been a part of esports before GT Academy, doing real-time strategy games and stuff.
All right.
But driving comes naturally to me, weirdly. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because I've been playing for so long. So literally I could get on straight away on Gran Turismo 5 and I was instantly fast. So I was like, okay. And the GT Academy came along and I was like, okay, I'll give that a go. And then I qualified for that. 2012, I qualified again. 2013, I eventually got to the European final. But when I was qualifying in 2011, when I'd found out I qualified, I had to take my driving test really fast because otherwise you couldn't go. You needed a driving license.
All right. So, oh, wow.
So I literally went and did it, passed my license with 2 weeks to go before GT Academy, the actual final. So that was pretty close. And that's pressure as well. But I was pretty pleased with that. But I learned to drive very, very fast. I was doing five or six lessons in an hour rather than what you normally do, which is a lesson an hour.
Yeah. I see you kind of did a block, did the whole thing and then just get it done. Yeah. That's pretty good. So it's all, I mean, what kind of cars was it that you had to drive for GT Academy?
So in GT Academy 2013 it was, we drove a Nissan Juke, a Nissan Micra stock car, a Nissan 370Z with a paintball gun on the front of it, in a Gymkhana kind of style. Also drove the Nismo 370, a GTR, and go-karts. I believe that is everything that I drove. So a couple of the guys drove sort of very race-spec Nissan 370s as well.
Uh-huh. Oh wow, so it's quite a, so you had to, it was ever who was fastest overall and all the different kind of cars, was it?
Kinda, but the thing with GT Academy is that you go, and you don't get much practice. So the Gymkhana, for example, you didn't get practice, you literally had to go out and do it one shot. So I made a mistake in the first hole, but then was fastest in the two other holes, but when you make one mistake, you're normally out at that point. They'd literally put a ton of pressure on you. You've got one shot. Go for it.
All right. Wow. That's pretty good going, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is quite a thing. Because people like Jan Malmsborough, he did quite well with that, didn't he? Did he not qualify from the GT Academy?
No, you're right. So in 2011, I was actually at the national final that Jan was at. And that's the year he won. So, interestingly with Jan, I remember getting to the hotel and he was sat there with his mum and he just had his headphones in and he was just completely just focused on what he wanted to do. And it was really weird. We got photos taken and I don't know, there was something about Jan where you could tell like he was really in for it. And I had a hunch that he was going to win for some reason. I've no idea why, but yeah, he was really on it.
Yeah. Because he's gone on to do quite a lot of major racing, hasn't he? I'm sure I saw him race at Monza and a few other places. I think he is now full time, I think, isn't he? A proper kind of professional racing driver.
Yeah, yeah, he's in Japan at the moment, racing in Super GT, racing Jenson Button, believe it or not.
All right. Oh wow. Oh. Yeah. So was that kind of what you would have liked to do, or would still like to kind of do if it came up? Or because I've noticed you on one of your when I was waiting for your live stream to start, you had pictures that you had driven, I think, at Rockingham, or you were driving, I think, a Formula 2 car or a Formula 3. It was a single seater, and there was a little clip of you racing around in the wet, which looked rather exciting in itself. Is that the kind of thing that you would really like to kind of get into eventually?
Yes, that was F3000. It was actually at Palmer Sport, that.
So they've got their own,
yeah, so they've got their own racetrack there and stuff. I actually did that a couple of times that year.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, from sim racing, so qualifying for a competition, winning a competition, winning that semi-final and going back and doing the final. In terms of racing, now I'd just rather do it as a hobby rather than full-time. It's interesting because most people are like, why wouldn't you want to professionally race? But I find that if I want to race, I'm going to have to invest a lot of money. And there's a lot of people out there investing more money who know more knowledge. And then I'd have to invest even more money. And then it's like go-karting now. It's like $250,000 a year to race competitively.
Really? So, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So personally, I'd actually rather race in esports now. I see esports being the future. So yeah. That's my focus. I don't mind racing one-offs as a hobby, you know, outside just for a bit of fun. But in terms of what I'd really want to do, it'd be a professional virtual racing driver now rather than a professional racing driver.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting because when I interviewed David Perrell a few months ago, he was saying exactly the same, that he races in the Blancpain GT Championship. But now he says it's actually better to do things like GT Sport and those kind of racing games than actually go-karting. Because you actually learn more doing that than you will on the go-kart, which I think is quite a thing. I mean, I suppose if you get access to go-karting, it's handy. But for him, he basically says that it's all esports, for the practice, kind of alert and learn new tracks and things like that. I mean, how do you find that, you know, you've set a lot of record times and you're always right up there with the fastest times and things. What is it that makes you able to do this? Because obviously for a lot of our listeners, you know, they're going to be, you know, sim drivers, they're trying to work out how to go a bit faster. But you know, our reactions maybe just aren't good enough yet, or we're missing, do you think it's just, you know, the lines really well and you just, you know, you're aware of how your car handles well. What do you think is it that gives you that kind of excellent qualifying and race pace?
It depends on the game, really. So with Gran Turismo, obviously you learn the physics and how the car handles, you know, what generally happens when you brake, what happens when you accelerate. But then at that point, it's all about finesse, I would say. So going into a corner, braking, muscle memory, you know, making sure you understand what's happening when you brake, why are you braking at that point, you know, trail braking and all the techniques that you would use in a real car as well. Once you get the hang of all those techniques, at that point, it's literally just putting it into practice. Now, when I look at a leaderboard, or when I go into an FIA event, I try and make sure I'm in the top 10 on the EMEA lap times. If I'm in there, I'm happy. I know I've got the pace.
Yeah.
If I'm not, I'll question why. And then what I will potentially do is look at sector times and go, okay, well, I'm losing 3 tenths in sector one. I'm just going to focus sector one. And this is a particular corner as well. So say there's 3 corners in sector one and there's 1 corner, which is definitely one that is killing the time, where I'm losing all the time. I'll just focus that corner and keep practicing that corner and then restart, practice that corner, restart, practice that corner, restart. And eventually it'll go in, and then even if you practice that corner and do an entire lap, your laps will get faster irrespective.
Yeah.
A lot of people tend to try and focus too much on the entire lap rather than one particular section. And then that's where people fall down, because then you might practice that corner and then go, oh, I need to practice this corner, and then not realize that you've actually gone faster on that corner and not remember it.
Because you're remembering, you're kind of, yeah, there's too much to remember for the whole lap, isn't it, rather than just...
Exactly.
That's a very, very good point, actually. I must remember that. I'll be writing that one down to try and make sure so basically this concentrate on one part of the lap rather than the whole thing.
Yes, exactly. And that's what a lot of people fail to do when they practice. And I always say this in all my guides and tutorials, just focus on one area. Even if it's just your braking technique, focus it on one corner. Because literally, when you learn that corner, you actually learn the whole track in itself, because you learn that car a little bit more. Yeah. So then when you get to the second corner, you go, oh, well, yeah, the car reacted like this on the first corner. It's probably going to do this on the second corner. And then there's the famous clip on Top Gear where so Jackie Stewart teaches James May, and he talks about oversteer.
And he literally says,
he pushes him and goes, you weren't prepared for that. And then next time he goes to push him, James May sort of forces into the push. And then he realizes that literally if you know what's going to happen in advance, you can prepare for it. So if you know the car's going to oversteer, you can already start to counter oversteer before it's even done it. And that way the oversteer might not actually happen because you've moved the weight a little bit.
Ah, right. Yeah. So you're kind of seeing it in advance and dealing with it. That's right. Because that's when James May had to reduce was it 10 or 15 or even 20 seconds off his time?
Yes.
Which is really good. I mean, that's the kind of thing I'd love to be able to do. Go to one of these coaches for a day and just say, right, this is where I am just now. Can you help me get a few seconds off my time, kind of that thing, you know? But I did race courses years and years ago, way back in 1993 when I was 18. I got one for my birthday, and I went down to Donington, and I got to drive a single seater. It was a Vauxhall Lotus car, and only because I was a lot thinner in those days, I could fit into it. they would look at you and say, right, that car or this car? And it was like a normal form of the Vauxhall or the Vauxhall Lotus, and I was thin enough to get into it. But that was great fun, just learning how it all worked. And at that point, it was all manual gears, and we had to rev the engine as you changed down and all that kind of thing. And we just went round the Donington loop. But it was great fun. And we drove like Astra GTEs, which were the kind of hot hatch of the day at that time. But they were just preparing for the European Grand Prix, which was going to be where Ayrton Senna would win in literally a couple of weeks later. So it was amazing seeing the whole thing getting worked. And then we actually saw that race. I came back down to watch it at Donington, 2 weeks later, and I saw Senna win, which was an incredible, incredible race. But it's so, I think for a lot of people, they're just desperately wanting to know, how do I go quicker? So they can get the ranking up a bit and get into the better results. But I think Gran Turismo has done really well because, I mean, it's very successful, but even though there's like issues like with penalties and stuff like that, people still just want to play it, don't they? It's addictive.
yeah, absolutely. But the thing with a penalty system, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, that other games like iRacing, yeah, they have their own penalty system, and some people will go, yeah, that penalty system is better, but Gran Turismo are building this game for the masses. iRacing's not building that game for a 7-year-old. Gran Turismo Sport is. So sometimes the penalty system may be a bit, and I can tell you this now, I can quote Kaz, he still thinks there's a lot of improvements to come to that penalty system. He has said that literally to me. But they've got to start somewhere and build it up. Sometimes they've made mistakes and put something in and it's gone completely wrong. Everybody does this at the end of the day. We're all human. But it'll eventually get there in the end. And as you say, we all still play it anyway because we all like the game. And it is good that the game is plug in and play, basically. Pick a car, go on a track, and you can race. A lot of the other games, it's plug in. Okay, I've got to set up 500 settings and then play, which is horrible.
Yeah, it was like that because I was saying the Super GT he does a lot of Xbox stuff. I don't really do Xbox at all, but he likes Forza. But I could never kind of get into that at all. It never kind of just doesn't feel as real as the likes of Gran Turismo. But I played Project Cars. I got the original one a number of years ago, and I loved that. Absolutely loved it. That was a great game, and I still play it. But I actually hold some of the fastest times, or one of the fastest times on that. On the westbound Azure, it's the one that's about 12 miles long, and I managed to get the fastest time on that. So I thought, well, at least it's not too bad. At least I can't be awful. But it's such a fun game, but I really struggled with Project Cars 2. it's a, as soon as I drive any car, I can barely get it round a corner, let alone the track. It's much more unnervy and kind of unsettled. So I was watching your program. In fact, it was one you did about a year ago. It came up on your channel about how to do the right settings, to go for a loose setting. And that was similarly better than the standard one. So I'll have to go back and try that again. But it was funny how the game was so different, because they all thought Project Cars 2 would be amazing, and yet it was always impossible to drive.
Yeah. And I've got to say, with Project Cars 2, and a lot of the drivers who played Project Cars 1, who I competed with, all were pumped up for Project Cars 2. I was pumped up for it. Everybody was pumped up for it. But I mean, this is where a game has tried to simulate too much. And this is where, like, a game shouldn't, like, Gran Turismo simulates a lot of stuff, but doesn't simulate everything. Yeah. I think Project Cars 2 tried to simulate too much, and therefore the fun was lost. And a game should be fun at the end of the day.
Yeah.
At the minute, as you say, you just like driving and playing, and you couldn't get around the corner. Well, instantly you're like, well, why? Why isn't it similar to Project Cars 1, just a little bit better? Why change everything? And even now, when I've played Project Cars 2 a couple of days ago, the braking, I've got to say, the braking is the worst thing ever in that game, and it instantly puts the fun out of it. And I've had people message me who used to play Project Cars 1, and they're like, is it still the same? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, right, well, I don't want to play that game, because it's not fun, because they can't control the car, it's not consistent. And people like consistency at the end of the day, because then they can learn a car, learn how to go fast, and actually race.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's great fun. I just loved it for the time trial, especially Project Cars 1. I just went to try to do as many tracks as I could, and then just try and work your way up the different ones. I loved all the ones in the south of France, and I was terrible at Monaco. I couldn't get anywhere in Monaco in some of the cars, but I just loved playing it. I had to turn up the brake pressure an awful lot, because I found that whenever you go out on your first lap, there'd be hardly any brakes at all. Then you just go straight on, you know, you'd have a massive understeer. I just loved it. Once you got into it, you just do it again and again until your time's got a bit better. Although some of the guys, I don't know, because it's a PC game as well, if they've got maybe different features, because I just do it on PlayStation, because some of the guys have got times that are so far ahead, and I just don't know how on earth they do it. Because it's like, you know, I'm maybe in the top 15 or something, but I'm still about 5 or 6 seconds off. And you kind of think, where are they getting the time from, you know, to be able to do all that? Because I think they have patches and different things, mods. I think they
The reason there's different times, especially on Project Cars 1, was the physics was different between the console and the PC version. Every time a PC game goes to console, they have to cut things out. Same happened with Assetto Corsa, because I had PC version and PS4 version. It's like, actually, with Assetto Corsa, that's probably the best example, because people played it on PS4 and was like, wow, that's amazing physics. And I was like, no, it's not. You want to go on PC. That's amazing physics. And same thing happens with Project Cars. Project Cars 2 even, there's some really strange stuff on that on PS4 versus the PC, which runs obviously a little bit better. That's the compromise to make. I suppose that's why Gran Turismo is so good, because they design it for the console. And it's not then built for the PC. It's purely for that console. Can they get it to work? If it works, it'll work for the majority of players, because they all basically use the same hardware. I mean, we have Pro and normal PS4 now, but that's not the end of the world.
Aye. Yeah, no, I've just got the standard. Actually, would you believe it? I won a PlayStation 4 last year. I was at a company car event down south, and Toyota and Lexus were there, and they had Ben Foster, I think it was. Is it the chap who, he runs a simulator and simulation business, and for a lot of these sports things, based at Silverstone. And they had a PlayStation 4 up for grabs if you could do the fastest time around the Brands Hatch short circuit. And I couldn't believe my luck when they had a Gran Turismo kind of set up there. I said, oh, I'm going to have a go on this. And there's quite a few people that obviously had a shot. And at the end of the first day, I was about 2/10 off. And then at the end of the second day, I just managed to get enough practice and I won it. It's such a good game, and the console is so easy to use. And, you know, as you say, you just plug in and play. But it'd be interesting. Where do you think the game will go? Because, I mean, it has gotten so good already. Do you think they'll just keep adding new tracks and things like that? Or do you have any insight as to what you think will happen with Gran Turismo?
So with Gran Turismo, there will be a crossover period with Sport and 7 in terms of the FIA events. That I've been told. I don't think it's confidential, so there you go. You know that much. So, you know, as there's an FIA event on, Gran Turismo 7 will release. That's a fact. So there will be a crossover point where people are playing Sport and 7 at the same time. Wow. Now, if I was to guess, well, if it's called 7, that is as well. I don't know if that's called 7, but I'm just calling it 7 because I believe they're going to put a full game out there now.
All right, excellent.
So, that's my belief anyway. I don't know if that's true or not. So, what I personally believe they should focus on now is they've got the graphics bang on point now. There's no need to push the graphics any further at this moment in time. Lucas Ordonez put a photo out the other day and it's literally, this is the realistic photo, this is the game picture. And it looks so similar, it's actually mind-blowing a little bit, really.
Yeah.
But what they should focus on now is getting more cars on track. I'd love to see a 30-car race, different types of racing, so multi-class racing. Get more circuits in, get some of the original circuits in. I mean, High Speed Ring, Trail Mountain, Deep Forest, Grand Valley, why are they not in? They're like true Grand Turismo tracks. So I suspect if it is a GT7 game, that these tracks are going to come back in. And in terms of tracks, actually, the FIA are only bothered about the real tracks in terms of making sure they're accurate to a very strict point. So in terms of the fantasy tracks, that's all up to PD. So, you know, they're not restricted to Deep Forest, for example, with all the little crests and, going up and down. They're not that bothered about that because that's Gran Turismo. They do fantasy tracks so well, better than anybody else.
Yeah.
So, that's where I see the game going. In terms of like esports side of it, I do expect it to grow in terms of manufacturer support and, you know, getting manufacturers involved a little bit more. I mean, we've seen the Toyota Super Cup coming in. Porsche have got their own cup in Japan. Super Formula are doing their own thing in Japan as well on the game. So a lot of people are seeing these events now and going, okay, I can see the marketing opportunity in terms of a manufacturer or Super Formula. They can see the marketing opportunity. And in the grand scheme of it, it's actually really cheap marketing for them. Because they access so many millions of players and like the Super Formula cars are in the game. So every single player who owns a game can play these cars. I mean, what more marketing can you ask for with that? Literally everybody has access to it. Everyone can play it and they go, ooh, where's this car from? Super Formula. Oh, I might have a Google and have a look what it's actually, you know, for the series. And instantly it's all marketing.
Yeah. I know it's good. And the Super Formula car is actually really good fun to drive. I think that's been one of the
best. It is brilliant.
Time, isn't it? It's noisy, it's fun, and it reacts really well, because they brought out the Formula One car, is it? The Mercedes. But it wasn't quite a hit, I don't think, really, overall. You don't see many people playing it that much, in the lobbies and stuff, really. It doesn't seem to be played at all. But Super, the other ones that, they definitely get, played an awful lot. I would love if they brought, like a V8 car, you know, like when they had one of the 2012, 2013, the last of the V8 engines, because I think they always look quite fun. They look amazing when you see them in real life. Sound is incredible. I remember Project Cars 1, they had a kind of F1 car, it was in the Formula A, but they had and that was quite good. They were quite hard to drive, but they were fun though. They were a good laugh. They'd half the time be taken off over the hills with them in road courses you'd be in life. But they were really, really good fun. But, it's such a good game. You kind of think, where is it going? I'd eventually like to get a kind of sim center up here in Duns, so we could actually do live races all the time. And then eventually stream it out. Cause I mean, obviously I'm totally kind of, PS4 based, but you obviously stream and do all that kind of stuff. Now you need quite a lot of technical stuff for that, don't you? You have a PC, I suppose, and then you have to plug in other bits and pieces so that enables us to be able to see what you're doing. Is it something that's quite complicated or is it fairly straightforward to do?
For me, in what I do, I've been doing this since, in reality, I actually streamed Gran Turismo 5. It was my first Gran Turismo I ever streamed. So that was a while ago. Yeah. That was a bit more complicated, but once you know how to do it, it really is straightforward. I mean, building a PC isn't actually that hard. When I built my PC, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a big task. But then I built it and I was like, wow, that was actually really easy. And there's that many guys out there to build a PC, it's fine. And then in terms of all the other equipment, it can be a pain sometimes because as you've seen earlier, you know, I've got multiple cameras. I have multiple microphones. So I've got to join certain things up, set certain things up. You know, is the wheel working? And it does get a bit iffy sometimes, but, I think the biggest thing actually for a YouTuber or a streamer is the amount of hard drive space you need. I've got more hard drive space than at work, in terms of the server, in my PC, and I need to upgrade it again because I'm actually running out of space really, really fast.
Wow. Is that because I suppose you have to save so much stuff and then working through it to edit it or whatever, or to kind of, or just to save it when then it goes out onto YouTube and different things?
So I save all my FIA races. So say if I do 3 races in a night, I'll save my best race, and then I'll bin off the video on demand, because that's already available on YouTube. There's no point saving that, trying to be a bit and everything. But so I can use that race in the future. So obviously I've been doing the highlights more now, because a lot of people want the highlights of the races, and I watch 3 hours of the live stream. So literally at that point, then I have to edit the clip. I record multiple audio streams so that, you know, you don't get my commentary over it as our live stream, you just get the raced footage audio instead, and then you'll make that video, then a highlights video of that video, and then obviously that's 2 videos stored on there, and that's like 10 gig at that point. And then that can then add up very quickly. I think I've got like 15 terabytes at the moment in my computer, and that's about to go up to 25, I hope.
So that is pretty, sounds rather technical in terms of what you need, but it's good to know though, because I mean there's now so many people streaming different videos and different lives. It's great fun kind of watching it. Whenever I get the time in the evening, I try and do a bit, because I kind of use my PC monitor for my PlayStation, so I just take one HDMI cable and put another one to play it. So I need to get another monitor so I can watch YouTube at the same time as I'm playing, and then I can kind of catch up, because then you can comment and do all sorts of stuff, and it's fun seeing the comments and seeing how, especially if you're in a race and you ask a question, what brake bias should I have, and then somebody will come up with it saying this is the best one from here, which is really good. It's a nice community feel to it, isn't it, that they do help each other out if you've got a question to kind of get an answer, and to try and help each other become more competitive, which is brilliant.
It is good. I must admit, on my streams especially, I seem to end up with all the aliens appearing in there at some point as well. So, you know, when somebody asks a question, they can actually ask probably some of the fastest guys in the world that same question, just all in one place. So it's kind of nice in that sense. One thing I will say though, with YouTube and Twitch and all that nonsense, because a lot of people go, should I YouTube? How do you get so big? Or, cause I'm not a big YouTuber. I just do it for the fun of it and to help people with the guides and stuff. Yeah. And a lot of people try and do it for money. And then literally, I will say this, if you try and do YouTube for money, you will fail. Literally, you do not earn anything on YouTube. You're better to go out and be more efficient with your time and work, etc. So if you are going to do YouTube, just do it for fun. And then it comes through in your content anyway. And then, you know, if you grow and become the biggest star in the world, you become the biggest star in the world. Just don't expect that sort of thing.
I think because everyone sees it as how much money they get per view and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
One of the biggest questions on YouTube at the moment. There's a few car videos here and there. We're doing a few more. I have a kind of holiday guide that I've just written, a travel guide about Orlando. So that's kind of on a different theme, and I'm using YouTube to try and make some videos for that, just to get publicity, really, just to, you know, put it out there and have a bit of fun with it. It's an amazing setup and an amazing kind of platform, isn't it, to see so many different videos of different subjects. You can pretty much put in anything and you'll find out what you would like. But in terms of your future career, how do you think it's going to go? I mean, have you got any kind of plans? Obviously, I know you're doing FIA. You were very recently in Paris for the finals there, and you did a video on that, which was really good fun. How do you think it will go for the rest of the other finals this year and things like that? Do you have any particular plans?
Well, I did want to try and maintain the been to every world final, world tour event that I could possibly go to, accolade that I have. But unfortunately, one of the world tours this year falls on a date that I definitely can't get off work. It's 100% guaranteed. Even the principal can't get a day off work that day. So I don't have a chance of that. However, in terms of the events, I'm hoping to qualify for Salzburg. I've qualified for Nürburgring, which is in, June, I think. Yeah, June. And then there's Tokyo later on in the year, and we don't know where the final's being held either. So I'd love to qualify for those events. In terms of where I see myself going with all of this, you know, I see more manufacturer involvement. So will a manufacturer sign a driver? I don't know. I'd like to see that happen, because at the end of the day, if it's good marketing for these teams. If you sign a driver, I don't know, say you sign a driver for 20k a year, but they have to use your cars in every single race. Mm-hmm. Then literally it's 20k. Then potentially if they've got a YouTube channel, they then get advertisement that way because they're constantly being used.
Yeah.
Represent them at live events. They're wearing the gear. They can go, oh yeah, look, we've got an eSport driver. They can use that to their advantage to get them out there. It's It's a very cheap way to market their manufacturer, especially to the younger generation, because motorsport at the moment has this big issue where young people are not watching motorsport as much as, you know, the fans are declining, basically. And that's why the FIA are involved with Gran Turismo. They see this decline. The amount of people marshalling events is declining. So events are going to struggle to even run soon. So they really need to get involved with the young people. And Gran Turismo is the easiest way to do that. That's why the FIA are involved. And I can see that's why manufacturers are probably going to get involved. Now, if that happens, obviously, if I get signed, then the full-time job goes out the window and I can do Gran Turismo full-time. I can make these events, but everything can change. I mean, if I was talking about this 3 years ago, I wasn't expecting any of this to happen. And then suddenly a lot of it has happened, happening, should I say, rather than happened. And you don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 years, to be honest with you. I mean, esports is growing. Virtual racing is growing. Could go anywhere.
Yeah. It's funny because I was just thinking, I mean, I've probably been watching YouTube videos in terms of motor racing ones for a good few years now, but I can't remember how it actually happened. I must have just stepped over it. You know, when you go into YouTube and it just finds out videos, you know, that are similar to your likes, because I love watching like racing videos and things like that. And of course then it came up with the sim races and I thought, well, I've played Gran Turismo. I watched that and then I think it was probably Super GT and then your good self and things like that, you know, that you start to see different ones and you subscribe to different channels and now it's gone crazy, isn't it? Everybody's watching them, man. Hundreds of thousands of people are watching them and subscribing to them. So it's amazing. It's become a real community, which is great. And you enjoy the characters of it all. Everyone's got something different to bring to the occasion. And it's good fun. I have to find it I tend to watch it like on a Monday night, because then I can try and get a little bit of insight as to how they do the new races for the week, you know, on Gran Turismo Sport. So you can see how they race and their lines and things like that and their kind of times as well. And then try if you can get anywhere near them. It's a great, great, great game. And let's see what happens with the future, eh? When whatever kind of new, as the new Gran Turismo games come out. And do you think that will be then on PlayStation 5? Or is that, you might know more than I do probably on, what it will actually work on.
I don't know exactly, but in my personal opinion, I suspect, I think even GT Planet, or I've seen some website post this anyway, that Gran Turismo 7 is going to be a launch title for PS5. And that's what I suspect, because GT6 was so late in the PS3 cycle.
Yeah.
The PS4 was out at that point, I think. They lost out a lot. And I think they need to get back into the two games a console scenario. And the best way to keep people entertained is with esports. GT Sports, the perfect way to keep them in the Gran Turismo for that PS4 life cycle.
Yeah.
Get PS5, get it as a launch title. They can then play it for 2 or 3 years, release another GT for another 2-3 years, and then the PS6 will then come out with whatever specs it might be. I mean, the PS5 specs seem a bit bonkers at the moment, to be honest. 8K. Imagine playing 8K. I don't even have a 4K telly.
Yeah, my goodness me. Ah, that will be something. That will be something. But that would be the super. I know a few months ago I had said that we were trying to organise a race up here, because we've got the Jim Clark Memorial Museum that's being reopened, and they're having people like Dario Franchitti and David Coulthard and others coming, and it's still in the pipeline. Because they do have a simulator in their museum, so hopefully I've been in contact with the Jim Clark Trust to try and see if they can put something on, but it's just taking a wee while for them to come back to us to see what we can do. But it would be a phenomenal if we can do a kind of Jim Clark Memorial race as an actual sim race, because I think that's the kind of future meeting the past. To get someone like your good self up here, I know that Super GT has also expressed interest as well. I think it would be an amazing event to do. I'm sure once things come into place, whether it's this year or not, or maybe it might be next year, we'll try and get something sorted, and I'll keep you posted on that, because I think that would be a fantastic event. I know you said before you'd express an interest that you'd be keen to come up.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what would be funny. if next year, if it was next year and I came up and I had the Audi R8 in the Audi livery that I've got this year, if I somehow pull off that deal that I've said on my channel.
You certainly would be well spotted, because it would be phenomenal to see it in Duns. That'd be where I live, and to see that amazing car. I do like your intro and the car, the liveries that you have, they're fantastic. I don't know how you get them all, how you create them, because I suppose you have to do it on a design program or something, but, they're fantastic, to see all these different designs, and I quite like the KFC one. It's quite funny as well. There's some good ones that people have made. Haven't they? What's your favorite, just as a quick?
To be fair, I actually really like the Jaguar livery that's been put on the Super Formula. I think that looks amazing. I mean, that's why they're so popular as well, the fact the livery editor's on there, but I don't actually do my liveries. There's a person in the community that does all my liveries, so occasionally come across and say, would you like a new livery on one of the cars? And I'd just be like, oh yeah, thank you. Obviously they follow the same design.
Yeah.
It takes him 10 minutes, would take me 4,000 hours probably to do. I can't do them. But yeah, it's called Mungino, and he's offered to do, you know, other people's liveries as well. So if you want a livery, you know, you can go find him on Twitter, and he should be able to do them. Incoming 5,000 requests, I imagine.
That would be nice, certainly. But it's interesting though, because I don't know how enough they do them, because they're fantastic. Some of the designs they have.
They are.
Just the originality of it, you know, how they come up with it is brilliant. That's super. Well, look, I very much appreciate you putting your time aside this morning on a sunny Saturday morning. I know you're very busy for FIE and things like that later on today, but I wish you all the best for your racing, and no doubt we'll be speaking to you on the comments on your live streams over the days ahead. But it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. And for all our listeners, it's Tisney Martin Grady, a very, very successful, multiple winner of FIA titles. In fact, why don't you give us an idea of what exactly you've won, because you've won an awful lot, and our listeners, I'm sure, would be keen to hear what you've won.
I've been to, I'll say the accolade I mentioned earlier. I'm the only British driver to have been to every world tour or live event that is possible for a British driver. I had the world first in the Red Bull car challenge on the pad back in 2011. GT Academy finalist. I came second at Salzburg with Peugeot. So I've got a trophy for that from one of the world tours. I've been to GT Academy. I've won a couple of Palmer Sport competitions, I've won £1,000 on Project Cars 1, Project Cars 1. Lots of different victories in the gaming CV being built.
Yeah, so you've got your trophy cabinet filling up there with virtual trophies and different prizes, which is great. That's super. Excellent. Well, look, I hope you have a wonderful day, Martin. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Hopefully we'll see you in person at one of these sim events in the near future. That would be brilliant. But to all the listeners, thank you very much for tuning in to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Tisney and Martin Grady. Now, as it's the first show of the Car, Sim and Podcast Show, we have some bonus content. Yes, that's right. It was an interview I recorded with my good friend Jonathan Sutherland, all about car stories, the best and the worst, and all in between. So, here's the bonus content from, it was the last ever edition of the Cardio Advisor Show, but here it is for you now. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to a brand new podcast. It's the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick. Now, every week we'll be having special guests like my good friend Jonathan Sutherland and some famous sim drivers like Tidgney, GT Tidgney, and also Super GT and many others. So the show is all about motor racing, racing drivers, plus we have updates and all the kind of special cars that are coming out, and of course funny stories on cars as well. Now, we used to do the Cardio Advisor podcast show, but we decided to give it a bit of a refresh and change the name and add a whole lot more. So our last podcast, we recorded a 20-minute segment with Jonathan Sutherland and my good self. And I thought I would put that on this last podcast for the Cardio Advisor Show, just to let you see what it was like. And of course, I'll add in our new interview with Tidgney in a few days' time, and that will go on the brand new podcast. So let's get ready for the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show. Here's the new intro.
And welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Make sure you like, subscribe and share our shows to get the latest motor racing news, interviews and motoring stories.
Hello, Hugh. It's great to be back on the podcast again. I hear you've been away in sunnier climes.
Yes, I took a two-week break from podcasting. I thought, right, time, it's Easter time, and the family's off on holiday and that from school. So I took them all the way to La Palma. And, I had a great time for a week, eating all-inclusive and enjoying it was fantastic roads, and the hire cars were amazing fun. So yes, I'm quite fired up to be back, actually.
Excellent stuff. And when you rented your car, was it Lucky Dip, or did you know what you were renting? Or did you get some horrendous old Seat, Mombea from about 1982?
Oh, there were some classics there, but it was actually the one that recommended by TUI. They're the provider that they back. They said, basically, go with us, and if anything goes wrong, we'll take them to court for you. Basically, that was
it. So you drive us out of a cliff trying to overtake an old Toyota Hiace.
But it was, so it was spectacular fun. And, we ended up with a Seat Leon, which I think had done 45,000 kilometres. So yeah. It's a fair bit of miles for a hire car. And it is, to be fair, the bodywork was in fairly good nick, a couple of stone chips here and there. And the interior was a wee bit worn. The steering wheel looked like someone had worn it away, or either been that or been a smoker or something. But everything worked, and it was a 1.2 TSI turbo petrol. And it was really quite fast, I have to say, because I mean, we were looking at really steep hills. I mean, anyone who's been to La Palma, it's the most undeveloped island of the Canaries, and the road system is very, very basic, and it's all hairpin after hairpin. And really very steep inclines, but they're great fun, absolutely brilliant fun. And we managed to do a route that was from the hotel, which is in the south of the island, through Fucalante over to, is it Ardeon to something, whatever, I can't quite remember, it was impossible to pronounce. And they said it'd take an hour to get there. Well, literally, it took us about 8 minutes to get up to Fucalante, which
is 8 minutes.
Yeah. And then it took us about another 20 minutes, including traffic lights, to get to this other town.
We're in the middle of the kind of rallied La Palma, a bit like a rally course. You've got sort of one of those French rally drivers coming around the corner at 120 miles an hour. And you just joined in.
Yeah, it was brilliant fun. I mean, the road, it's just like
45,000 kilometres on La Palma is like 145,000 kilometres in anywhere else with motorway. Yeah, when you see that advertised, 45,000 motorway kilometres, you know they're lying.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, because even though it's all S-bends and that, you can sometimes straighten them out, because you've got enough to see, the next few bends in advance.
Yeah.
So you can just cut the corner and come straight through. And so it is just like kind of Rally Monte Carlo, you're just hearing around these bends in this hire car. And it's brilliant until I realised that I was actually racing a police car in front. Because I thought, he's going for it. I thought, I'll try and keep up with him. And then I realised when he pulled over, it was the police L, So I don't think they were that impressed.
Yeah, they're normally chasing people, not being chased, you.
It was the white and green that unfortunately I missed, which was the major flaw there.
Exactly, and Polizzi, Garda, is it Garda in Spanish?
Yeah, Garda, I'm sure our listeners will be able to tell us. It's great fun. I recommend it. I think all the Canary Islands are pretty good, actually, for driving, especially Fuerteventura. The roads in Fuerteventura are amazing, because it's all through the desert, it's that kind of desert on the side, and then you've got these wonderful tarmac roads.
It's moon, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not that busy, so you can have a great time kind of racing along, and I mean, really, you want the fastest car that you can get out of your car hire company.
Is that what you asked for? Give me the fastest car you've got.
Yeah, the Seat Leon 1.2.
Well, that was the fastest car they've got then. Fine.
Yeah, well, somebody, though, managed to rent a really nice new Megane, the GT line, because it was sitting there in the car park outside the hotel, and I noticed it had one of the Avia car rental stickers on it. And I thought that would have been quite nice. And I chose that group, the Megane style, because they said they got Fiat Pandas, but I think they got like 1 out of 5 in the NCAP test. So I thought, I really don't want that when you're, facing cliff edges and things like that. So
at least they got one.
And then you're dead.
Was it the Metro that didn't get any, or the Rover 100 or something, and then kept up the market because it just kind of kept going on the offset crash test. It just split in half. And the other half that didn't hit the wall just kept going.
It was like automated. So it was brilliant. And the cars, I did take some pictures, but everyone had Ligiers. You know the old Ligier cars?
Oh my goodness,
they
yeah.
They were wrecks. I mean, some of these ancient old things. So they obviously they can drive them on, you know, a 16-year-old thing can have one on a motorcycle license. But they were pretty slow, but we had some great fun overtaking different cars and vans. And some of the driving there was amazing. I mean, they're really flying in these, this Toyota Hiace van.
Yeah.
I took a video of, he was absolutely pushing it around the bends and the amount of smoke coming out the back of it. I mean, and there was this Peugeot 206 estate, or 208 estate that was being, I mean, it was literally an inch behind it. And eventually he gave way and allowed the van to pass. But it was great fun. So I thought, well, if he can drive all that, so will I, you know.
Exactly. Tell me though, when you go to places like, well, particularly if you go to, India or if you go to Thailand and you drive like they do over there and you come back and you really have to reset when you get back to the UK because it's just like, you know, if there's space, you can use it. You know,
yeah, exactly. And there's no traffic lights
or the pavement, you know, all bets are off, you know, if you're not, it's survival of the fittest, really. Yeah. So,
although in the one town that we went to, they had this bit where not only because in Spain it's usually really easy to drive in the towns because it's just roundabouts and you get the zebra crossings, so you can usually kind of look at the people to see where they are.
Yeah.
You normally don't have to stop that often, but they had not only that they had crossings and roundabouts, but then they had traffic lights before them in this town, so it meant that nobody moved anywhere. It was
That's quite ridiculous, dodgy.
Yeah, it was almost a bit like Edinburgh Council, I thought.
Yeah, to put traffic on the roundabouts. You think you'd have either or, you know, rather than both.
Yeah, but
there's a bit else telegraphed last week. It could have been written by you, and it was just saying how traffic lights make everything worse. In this town, I forget where it was, he was saying that the traffic lights went off and the whole thing was working fine.
Yeah.
And without the lights there, he said people were just stopping. And if someone wants to cross the road, drivers are just letting them cross the road.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
It was just a sense of fair play. You know, when you take away, you know, the entitlement of the green lights, people, they behave fairly. You know, so after a couple of cars went, everyone would just nod the pedestrian through. People made eye contact. They took their hands off their telephones and, you know, actually had to sort of, get involved, you know, and make eye contact with drivers.
You mean they were actually looking where they're going? Because, I mean, you still
see them. Otherwise, they're going to be knocked down. Basically.
That's why automated cars can't come fast enough.
That's right, exactly. Anyway, you've been telling me about your car you saw in Dunn's today, Hugh. You told me that earlier on.
Well, actually,
I was almost fell off a chair when you said you liked it. So,
miracles.
This is.
We saw this car as we came into Dunn's, and we thought, what's that? Both of one and I said, my goodness, you know, it looked like a Honda Civic or something rather sporty. And then I realized it was the new Toyota Corolla. It's a Toyota. I can't believe I've actually said that Toyota looks decent.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's the case. The Toyota actually managed to produce a car that looks anything other than extraordinarily dull. But I remember, well, we were talking about the car that I had when we were, well, I had my parents had when we were young. The Corolla GTI, the mid-80s, 87, I think the one we had. It was one of the first ones.
It was an F. And they kind of,
bearing in mind that car is 32 years ago, that car was launched. Yeah. And actually, even if you see one today, very rarely, but you do, they kind of still look relatively modern.
Yeah.
From then, every model that came out kind of got duller and duller and duller. And I think as the Japanese went into their kind of 20-year stagflation recession, the equipment got less and less and less, and the dashboards got duller and duller and plainer and cheaper and greyer, more brittle plastic until they're basically made out of egg boxes. And then people just stopped buying them. But yeah, I agree with you. The new Toyota Corolla, it looks incredibly sharp. Yeah. It really does. It's just distinctive. It's a bit different. Obviously, the one you saw was a decent specification, was it?
Yeah, it was red with black wheels, and it looked like it must have been a high-end one because it had all the extra bits and a bit of chrome here and there as well. But it definitely looked good. I mean, because I saw the new Toyota RAV4, it's been just launched. I have to say, another car, like another YouTube channel, a very famous YouTube channel that was reviewing it with a chap. And I kept saying it looked like the back of a Renault Koleos, you know, the old one.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the front of the Toyota that looked okay, to be fair. But the back three quarter side, honestly, it was like the old Renault Koleos. It was totally weird and nasty. It was like an old Pontiac, you know, it was that kind of very weird looking thing.
Yeah, well, the old one, that was the first one they brought out. It was actually built by Samsung or something, wasn't it? It was not South Korean.
Yeah, some kind of
thing. It was by someone that you wouldn't expect to build a car. And kind of looks like someone that wasn't terribly used to building cars.
Yes, I don't know about the new
Picasso, round, it's pretty even awful. Worse. You know, the old Picasso where you didn't know which way it was going, you know, yeah. you just sort of put the wheel on the other side and it was sort of, it's just total egg on wheels. They just look, very, very peculiar. But I think you're right, because I've just been wandering around central Edinburgh today and, I saw a car on George Street, which is probably one of the more expensive shopping streets in Edinburgh. Yeah. And you quite often see Range Rovers and Aston Martins and Bentleys, and there was a Ferrari Murcielago there today, so obviously head of the council was in town. But suddenly one of the cars really stood out on the street. I thought, you know, I was looking at that car rather than any other ones, and rather like you were surprised by the Toyota Corolla, that was the new Peugeot 508. And it was a French registered one. So I hadn't actually seen one on the roads before, but obviously they've launched them in France. And it was again a high spec one in a nice colour. And it looked fantastic. It really did. I mean, I think it's probably about a £23,000-£24,000 car. It really stood out among the kind of sea of Audi SQ5s, SQ7s and A3s, A4s, S5s, A5s, A6s, A7s, A8s, A1s, A2s, SQ2s, SQ3s, RSQ5s, RS5s, SQRS5s, I don't know, losing the plot. But they all look the same, they look awful. So, and the worst people buy those cars, they really do. Real.
That's probably 3 out of 10 of our listeners gone.
You can redeem yourself by going to cardealadvisor.uk and buying yourself either a Toyota Corolla or a Peugeot 508. And they're things that we never thought we'd say. But they're really sharp. And I do honestly think, obviously I'm slightly speaking in jest, but the fact that the German cars are so predictable and they're so safe, and actually you just long for something a bit different. Yeah. And now it's the kind of what you might call non-prestige manufacturers which are producing some of the more interesting cars. Probably because they've got to. Yeah. They've been forced out by everyone buying Audis and BMs and Mercs on PCPs. But to get some attention, they've actually had to get the designers and, you know, pay them a little bit of overtime to make the cars look better.
I know, that's the thing, isn't it? But no, it's funny now, as you say, as kind of normal brands are actually making more interesting cars. There's a new Ford Puma as well that's coming out, but that's going to be a kind of SUV that's just...
That's a bit odd. Yeah. It looks a lot smaller. I mean...
It's no longer the nice coupe. It's a kind of... It's above the EcoSport, but below the Cougar. And I thought, I don't know if that's going to work. But they seem to say that it's more driver-focused, so perhaps that might help it to do quite well and see how it all goes.
A little sort of sporty hatch like the Puma... There's not, I'm trying to think what's on the market. You've had the Tigra, which was kind of a Corsa, which was never a good thing. But the Puma was based on the Fiesta, wasn't it, from the 90s. That was also quite a nice little chassis that car had.
Yeah,
and you could probably get a new one for sort of, back then, maybe 12, 13, 14,000.
They were cheap.
Something like that, 1.7 or something they had in it.
Yeah.
Quite funky, they're a bit different, they were cheap to insure, and dealers everywhere. The new one, I've just got a picture of it now.
You think they could have made this, gone back to the old chassis and then just see what, improved on it, put in new tech, and then shoved it out the door. And it would be a cheap car to produce, and those cars, now people want something a bit that's fun and dynamic, because the SUVs are not dynamic at all. I mean, who wants a Fiesta? What's that one? They've now got, is it an All-Track or something?
Yeah.
They've got a Fiesta Active, which is just like it sits higher up and it looks worse than an old City Rover. But,
that's saying something. Yeah. No, I'm trying to think of a car. If someone came to you and said, let's put the price up slightly, a small sort of cute, coupe, cheap to insure, maybe for about 15,000, 16,000, 70,000. I'm just struggling to think
You'd have to go for like MX5 or the last of the Fiat 127s, the convertibles.
They were two-door, weren't they? Whereas the other ones were, there used to be some sort of nice cheap little coupes. They just don't seem to make that anymore. I think it's because everyone's gone for SUVs. I think you're right. But you kind of lose everything with an SUV. You lose the handling, you lose the poise of the car. I suppose with the state of the roads today and the potholes and things, you need maybe sort of chunkier wheels and stuff to get through the holes in the road. But I don't get it. You think someone would just make a cheap convertible, coupe, which someone could buy for sort of 15,000, 16,000, 17,000 from the PCP for maybe 179 a month.
Yeah.
Based on a Super Mini, you can just chuck them out the door. It seems to be able to come up with endless variations of SUVs or active sports or actives or eco sports and that kind of nonsense. Why not just make a nice little cheap coupe?
Exactly. I'll tell you what looks really smart, and which is a kind of new small hatchback as well that's coming out, is the new Peugeot 208. It looks really nice.
Yeah.
Really, really smart, actually. Peugeot with their design team have really done well. And I know from what you were saying earlier about the 508, they look lovely because they've got the frameless glass windows. The one we saw at Company Car,
yeah,
was a left-hand drive one, but it was white, top of the range, and it's good money off them. We can get normally $4,000 or $5,000 quite easily off them. So it actually makes quite a decent car. But surprisingly enough, one of the main YouTube channel reviews did a kind of triple test of the new 508 versus the new Insignia Grand Sport, and then the Mazda 6. And all three of them are lovely looking cars. I mean, really nice, nice cars. And you wouldn't believe what came top. The Insignia.
Really?
They said the Insignia Grand Sport, it was better value and also drove better than the Mazda and the 508. They said that the ride was good in the 508, but its handling wasn't that involving, compared to how it looked. And they said the Mazda, again, the steering wasn't great on the Mazda. It did its job, but it wasn't very involving. But the Insignia was simply the best of the lot, and it was a big surprise. So I was quite surprised at that too, actually. Because I would have thought that the Peugeot or the Mazda, especially the Mazda, would have been the driver's car.
Yeah, well, then they've had a reputation over the last, well, almost 15, 20 years now, producing some really good cars, even back to the original kind of Zados 6, which maybe they were quite good rear drive.
Yeah, I liked them.
And obviously they pushed the technology then into the mainstream stuff.
So the
3s and Mazda 6s were actually quite sharp cars, and their designs were good as
well. Yeah, I bought one at auction for £600. It was that funny engine.
They got six. Six, didn't they?
And it sounded incredible. I should have bought it because it was a great car. And they were quite luxury saloons. They had leather trim and all the sort. And the gearboxes were amazing in them. Really slick.
They were kind of American too. And I quite liked that about them. There was something a little slightly exotic about a Zados 6 back then.
Yeah, it's like a car you drive in Miami or something, isn't it? It's
over the time. Right, yeah. But I think more and more, I know we've spoken about thinking about it endlessly and bore you to death, but I do think it's time for people to go back to some mainstream brands. The people that are buying Beamers and Audis, go and try it. I mean, maybe Vauxhall's a bit too downmarket, but try...
don't go for a Mokka or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you're absolute nemesis, the Vauxhall Mokka. But yeah, maybe try a 508 GT. You know, what can you lose on a PCP? You know, only $399 a month or something. And you'd be glad for that guaranteed minimum value at the end of it, that's for sure. Take it back and the dealer's in tears because he's having to give you $8,000 for a car that's like $1,500 in an auction. Every warning light on the dashboard. But you know, you get out of it.
That's
for free, and you go and buy something else.
I think you'd be fairly, if you got a good deal in it at the start, I think you'd be fairly safe for one of them, to be fair. I think the residuals actually is quite good on them compared to previous cars, you know, because it looks so much better than the last 508, which is just a taxi, really. This looks, you know, like a proper car. I think it's their best attempt. And I mean, I still think the new 3008 and the new 5008 are very good as well. I think they look quite smart. You get them in a nice, strong colour. And they are very distinctive. I love their small steering wheels as well, and the automatic gearboxes. They've got the flappy paddle gearboxes on them.
And the steering wheel means you just can't see any instruments.
Well, in the smaller cars, that was the case. I think in the bigger cars, they're a bit better.
Tiny disadvantage with that system. I mean, it'd be fine if they had a HUD in a standard head-up display, but I think for most drivers, it's had a very particular driving position, or you're short like Emmanuel Macron or someone, then you couldn't see the wheels. You can see the instruments through the wheel. But no, interesting stuff. I'm going to go now, Hugh, but it's been fantastic to catch up with you.
Yes, and I'll say that brings the first part of the Cardo Advisor podcast to an end, but we'll be right back after this very short commercial break. At cardioadvisor.co.uk, we can help you save thousands of pounds on your next new car or van. And we can also source second-hand cars as well. And we can save you money on car rental, whether it be in the UK and abroad. Just click our rental link on the website. And we'll give you a free gift if you trade in your car with We Buy Any Car using our special website link. So go to the website now and see how much you can save. And it's back to the show. Thanks for listening. For more information, go to cardoadvisor.co.uk and you can see all the special offers that we have on the website. And remember, we have our YouTube channel, which is at Hugh Hattrick, and also we have our podcast on Podbean, on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Anchor FM. And if you like what you hear, please like and subscribe to our shows, or you can donate every month for just a pound. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.